as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. Been doing business 20-some years. I've seen the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs. And I, as the owner of Coins Plus, for those, I've had some questions lately on just kind of what my background was, and I've gone through it. But, you know, I might as well tell you a little bit about Coins Plus and how we got here. I grew up, I guess, in a home that was kind of a secondhand, kind of loving home. My grandparents were antique dealers. And, you know, I don't particularly remember when I really kind of got into coins, but one of my earliest memories, believe it or not, is a Mercury silver dime when I was, I swear I must have been 1.5 years old or something. I think I had an aunt give me one or something, and it just stuck in my head, and I just was intrigued with it. She used to bring us silver dollars. This, of course, I grew up in Montana, and as crazy as it is, back in the 60s and early 70s, to date myself, silver dollars were still floating around. And I had an aunt that every time she came, she gave you a couple, two, three silver dollars. And I, you know, always had an interest in those. And I foolishly, as a child, spent them on what I probably couldn't even tell you. But so that was sort of this desire that went dormant. And then as I grew up, I went through some different things. I had some, you know, some rougher upbringings in ways, and not anything I want sympathy for. Sometimes when I tell people my actual testimony of what I went through and some of the stuff I went through growing up, there was definitely dysfunction in my family, and you know, and some of that played out on me. And I mean, there, it's just really it's kind of funny because it's a really cool story. I mean, my life is an interesting story. I just grew up, you know, I have to believe, that God picks and chooses where he puts us. You know, our souls are completely separate from our external bodies. And God chooses where to put us and why to put us there, and we don't know why. Why is one person born royalty and another person is born into a home where they're exposed to a lot of terrible things and maybe end up in, you know, in a lot of trouble or a very rough situation? That's a hard situation. And, you know, folks, there's something the Lord talks about called grace. On Friday, I talked about forgiveness. And, you know, you can't forgive without grace. The two go hand in hand. And to me, it's pretty darn important that you understand the symbiosis between the two, because grace is undeserved favor. It's where God does something really good for us, and it's not just God. I mean, we can extend grace towards one another, but we are all sinners, and we all, believe it or not, we all deserve to be cast into hell, which, you know, some people argue whether hell exists or not. I don't care. I think the Bible, Jesus was pretty clear about it. People debate what actual words he used and what he actually meant. But we know that when Jesus died, he went down and he recovered the keys to Hades, whatever that means. I mean, that's, folks, stuff like that's pretty cool stuff, you know? I mean, you start getting into some sci-fi things. It really, or whatever you want to call it, it's really cool when you start thinking about how much truth there is to so many of these stories. And when you even get into J.R.R. Tolkien, the author, and you realize that he was one of the translators, he was involved in translating the Dead Sea Scrolls, And after that, he wrote The Lord of the Rings. It's like, wow, you know, because the, you know, the whole concept of the Middle Earth and orcas and all that, a lot of that's somewhere buried in those books. And, it's pretty phenomenal. So the history of the Earth, I personally think, is far more in depth than we want to give it. I think that we tend to be very simplistic in our thinking. I think we take everything very pragmatically. If you think about it, folks, we take things very black and white. If you look at God's creation, the magnificence of it, from, you know, 6 trillion stars, which have X number of planets associated with them, and gravity and the interaction of them, and, you know, globular clusters where supposedly all these cotton candy style stars, millions, found each other and they all gravitationally interact with one another, is, you know, it's a bunch of malarkey. But the just you go from that level of his creation all the way down to the microscopic level of a cell, and the fact that each cell is a factory that produces everything. It takes care, it processes everything you eat. I mean, it is, it you know, they all work together simultaneously. It's, I'll tell you, it's pretty obvious listening to me right now. I'm definitely not a biologist, but what I will tell you is, wow, right? I mean, really, wow. What God created is phenomenal. So, the again, how did I get here? So I had a little bit of a rough upbringing, and there was a period of time that my parents cast me out at a very young age. They chose not to have me around. It was my mom's, just kind of her way of dealing with stuff, and I forgive her, and I love her, and she's a believer, and she loves Jesus, and I love that, and I have such a good relationship with her. About a year and a half ago, I lost my father, who surprisingly, in my upbringing, really had absolutely nothing to do with anything that I did. And Coins, as I was in banking, essentially, I had been outcast from my home. When a child is cast out of a home, the child tends to blame themselves no matter how bad the situation is. One thing that's important to understand is children blame themselves. If adults get divorced or whatever, kids beat themselves up. They really do, because kids don't understand the complexities of adulthood. And I'm not saying that all of the complexities are correct or true. There's a lot of things that we get tangled up in that are just not, you know, in a marriage or a relationship, that are not healthy. They're where we lack forgiveness and we carry grudges and we say things that are so mean and hurtful and cutting. And that's why James, you know, he talks clearly about the power of the tongue. You know, when you think about the power of the tongue, it is phenomenal. When you think of the fact that you can absolutely transform your life in moments with simple words that you say. Now, I've had people say, you know, no, that's, I don't really buy that. Okay. Well, it doesn't really matter if you buy it, because, for example, if you call up and you threaten the President of the United States over the phone, you will instantly change the outcome of the future of your life. Just a simple couple sentences. You will begin a process you wished you did not begin. However, with the new, you know, situation we live under, we've got all kinds of, you know, sin abounds. I mean, let's face it, we've got people getting away with crazy stuff. You've got Bill Clinton meeting with Loretta Lynch on the tarmac of an aircraft prior to the exoneration of Hillary Clinton. And, of course, James Comey, blah, blah, blah. Very, very powerful people abusing the system. And so corruption is something that there's such a drastic list of corrupt acts of corruption in our government right now. I wouldn't even know where to begin to discuss a list like that, but I can tell you the number of scandals that have taken place and the fact that people get away with stuff and the fact that you and I, if we do the same things, I mean, we all know the stories. We know the stories of people, you know, doing stupid things like a 20-year-old taking three pictures of the inside of a submarine on his cell phone because he's excited and getting 12 months in prison. And then we know of Hillary Clinton deleting 33,000 emails that we know of and getting nothing. Or Hillary Clinton's right-hand person being the wife of Anthony Weiner, who, ironically, what a name, it gets arrested for child pornography. And, you know, and then as they go through that laptop, they begin to discover all kinds of other information that is top secret. And, you know, on and on it goes. You've got the guy who supposedly leaked the information on the DNC, that's the Democratic National Convention, that leaked the information that basically showed that they had made sure that Bernie Sanders couldn't make it. Why? Two simple reasons. One, they thought that Bernie Sanders would never be able to beat Donald Trump, which I believe. But two, because Hillary is a very entitled person, and she believed it was hers. And, you know, her pitch was always that I'm a woman. 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 And that, you know, there's a little more, I'd hope, to running this country than that. I think from a business perspective, Donald Trump is doing a fine job. The dollar has been incredibly strong. But at the same time, it appears to you and I that the metals are weak. They are not weak. They are only reacting to the temporary strength in the dollar. I will tell you without any doubt whatsoever that this ongoing strength of the stock market will not continue forever. It's actually kind of scary, and the reason is this. When you get like Apple stock, it's such a high level. I mean, when do you jump in? I mean, it's obvious when to jump out, which is now, but how, you know, these people that are jumping in, why, when, what are they thinking? And they've got, you know, this whole situation set up where they're sure that they're going to make all this, you know, that they're going to make all this money while you essentially, you've got a market that is so tapped out and so stretched out that, I mean, I really don't see where it has room to grow. A friend of mine the other day, who is a financial analyst, he said that he believes that as long as Trump's in office, they're going to continue to do everything they can to keep the market on roaring. Now, that may be true, but the bottom line is I would give that about a, at best, a 50-50 shot. You can't keep it going like that. Unfortunately, what I see coming is I see a very dire event that lies ahead. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen, but I do believe it's going to happen. And I think it's going to be used as the focus to justify a severe, quote-unquote, correction in the markets. And it's going to be a 9-1-1 style event. I will say, I hate to even say things like this, but praise God, knock on wood, praise God that we haven't had more of these school shootings. I hope we've become smarter. I don't know what goes through the minds of these people that do this stuff. I do know that they love to hand out SSRIs to everybody. I know that there are many listeners to the radio show right now who are on SSRIs. Why do I know that? The reason I know that is because when you go to the doctor and you're dealing with just about anything now, they try to put you on SSRIs. I mean, they just do. Have I had them try to do it to me? Sure. When I was in the doctor's office after my father died, I explained, you know, that I was there for a foot issue, I think, or a shoulder issue or something. And when they asked how I was doing, I said, not real well. I explained how much I missed him, how much he meant to me, how close he was. My father and I shared this business like you can't even believe. We talked every day. He was in Montana. We talked every day, sometimes multiple times a day. And it was so neat because as a father growing up, he was such a, I didn't want to say it. You know what I mean? He didn't do a good job. Okay. He just wasn't a good father, but you know, out of respect and love and honor for my father, I don't even want to say that. And you know, the Bible does say that we are to honor our mother and our father. That is the core of society, okay? That's where love, that's where stability comes from. That's where society functions. That's where good things happen, is to honor and respect and love your parents. It teaches us everything we need to know about life. It teaches us how to behave in a work environment. And the killer of it all, that might be an odd word, is the fact that it's the only commandment with a promise that says if you honor your father and mother, you'll live a long, healthy, happy life. Now, what's weird about that is, what if your mother and your father are on methamphetamines? In other words, what if your mother and father are drug addicts in prison and but you know what, folks? I have two friends who are in that exact situation, whose parents are in prison. They're very, you know, they're criminals. And he still honors them. He actually named one of his children after his father, who is in prison. He honors them because he honors God. And he honors God because God says to do so. And Jesus said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. Or he says also that you show your love for me by keeping my commandments. So, you know, praise God. Honor your father and mother. Last week I talked about forgiveness. If any one of you has got resentments against your parents for whatever they did, okay, now I'll tell you, I have a good friend who was sexually molested by his father, starting at a very young age in a very sick, sad, pathetic way. Now, there's a difference between forgiveness and forgetfulness. Yes, he needs to forgive and move on. Why? For the simple fact that he himself has to stay healthy. He needs that. But you can still honor your mother and father and yet you don't have to engage in a dysfunctional level to do so. You just have to follow and obey the Bible, okay? So there we are. Now, how did I get here? How did Coins Plus begin? So I was looking and praying for an opportunity. I spent years in banking. I spent years at the office late. pulling queries, and this is just me. Everybody's built differently, okay? I always was what they call a driver. I was a type A, double A, whatever. I was the kind of guy that just pushed and pushed, and I always hoped for more. I wished for more. I always dreamt of building a beautiful home. And one thing that was really ironic, we just sold a home that was on the Spokane River down by Coeur d'Alene Lake. The home is absolutely the most magnificent thing you've seen. It was so beautiful. And what really blew my mind was after, we had bought a house and we were going to do a moderate remodel. And as we got deeper into the house, more and more issues presented themselves. And we ended up having to gut the entire home and redo it, which became extraordinarily expensive. And you know the rest of that story. You end up with a big mortgage and all this, which I really didn't like. But one thing that was really ironic to me that blew my mind was I had dug out in college, I was very interested in architecture. I was in mathematics, but I'm very naturally gifted in architecture. I love architecture. I'm gifted in drafting. I'm gifted in numbers. I mean, when it comes to just simplistic, simplistic science or whatever, I'm very naturally gifted that way. And when I was in college, believe it or not, I drew a picture of my dream home. And it was on the water and it was everything. Later on, once we were in our home, which we loved very much, I found that picture. I dug it out and I said, honey, I had my wife look at it. I said, can you imagine this? Come and look at this. Absolutely to a T, everything that I had decided that I wanted to do, I had done. I had reproduced this vision that God had given me at the time, which means what? God planted that vision in my heart. And, that house was it. That's what makes it a little bit hard to sell. It's very hard to sell. It was a very expensive home. We way overdid it when we built it. And the reason we sold it was because we had a mortgage on it. And I would rather get and I had a lot of equity in it. I had a tremendous amount of equity in it. And I also had a mortgage on it. So when you put the two together, from a smart financial perspective, it's foolish, first of all, in my opinion. If you own, let's say you have a $1 million home, but you only owe $250,000 on it. Well, you might think, well, that's great. You've got $750,000 in equity. My problem from being a banker was I don't see it that way. I thought, I'd always think, well, geez, this house is worth $1 million or whatever it was, more than that. And I only owe this amount, which is a small amount. But then I would think, but that means the bank could take my home for this small amount of money. Those kinds of things hurt me. You know, they concerned me. And we've had an interesting process. Our house is very nice, the house we just sold. We've already been funded on it. We had a certain window of occupancy time to get out of there. And so basically the people that are buying it have not, I mean, frankly, they haven't been the most kind or cooperative people that I've ever met, which is a little bit sad because you would want the people moving into your house to be your friends. And my wife at the time, the day they wanted to come through, we had a lot going on, and one of those things going on was the fact that my wife has rheumatoid arthritis, and she was having a bad flare, and so on and so forth, and, you know, so those people got a little frustrated, and they've been a little bit difficult since, which is kind of sad, because it's such a beautiful home, And I poured my heart, soul into it at a level you wouldn't even believe. I put so much rock and timber into that thing, you wouldn't even believe it. But, you know, I sit on the air sometimes and I say, hey, will you pray for me? And I've gotten leery about doing it because I've had people call and say, what's the matter? Is your business going under? Are you in trouble? Is this? And I'll tell you, folks, right now, our business has never been better. People used to make comments. They'd say, oh, you have to watch Coins Plus, you know. They have all that overhead of that big building. Well, let me tell you, folks, not that you need to know my financial business, but, you know, I guess if I was a publicly traded company and you were shareholders, you'd know this anyway. I own this building free and clear. It is a 12,000 square foot building. Very, very nice. Not one of the nicer buildings in Spokane. Probably the nicest building in our industry nationwide. We offer safe depository service that's second to none. The security that's built into this building is so far from the ground up, beyond anything you would imagine. Walls made out of solid concrete with 1-inch steel rebar all throughout it. Bullet and bomb resistant polycarbonate where you think you see glass, you know. 800-pound bomb-proof doors, Class 2 vaults, which are 36 inches of poured concrete wrapped in 1-inch thick T12-resistant plate steel. You know, multi-line transfers of an alarm system, 24/7 surveillance, motion surveillance in our vault, so that our vaults are never, ever attended. In other words, we never allow a customer in one of our vaults without being accompanied with one of our employees. When I say our vaults, I really am referring to our safe depository service. Our safe depository service starts out at about $60 a year and goes up from there depending on the size of the box. I know that you can get boxes at the bank for less than that. But they do that as a loss leader, number one. And number two, they really don't offer the security we offer. And I'll tell you what I mean. Bank of America has had all these problems, one after the next. It's been going on forever, where they literally have people's merchandise disappear. Gone. No proof. Gone. Okay? We've had people I've dealt with personally that they have nothing to stand on. The bank's attitude is, you don't have any proof it was ever there. You're done. That's it. You know, the only way they get any attention is if maybe they go to the media, which a lot of them don't because they don't figure it does any good. You know, so you've got that going on. You've got the fact that we're privately held. You know, we have the highest quality depository boxes known to man. I've discussed all the faults and defaults of banks being so, whatever you want to call it, just lax with allowing people in and out of there without any kind of, sure, they sign you in. But then you're allowed to stand there as long as you want. You can bring a bag of tools if you want. I mean, you can just really clean those things out. And so it's important. The other thing is ours is completely private and anonymous. The only people that know you have it are those you choose to let know. Now, to a lot of you, you might say, well, why would I care about that? I have seen the best of the best people end up in legal situations they never would have dreamt that they had no reason to be in. It wasn't fair. It wasn't right. It wasn't anything to do with something they did. It just, they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, or they got involved in a business deal that went bad or whatever. And so when you have the private anonymity of a box at Coins Plus, it's off the grid. It's off the charts. It's not reported to the IRS. Why do you think the IRS has a tax deductible line that allows you to write off your safe deposit box. It's very simple. They want you to be foolish enough to tell them that you have a safe deposit box and exactly where it is. All you save is the taxes on your itemization of like maybe, what, $25-$30, and yet you're giving up all your information. The other thing is the IRS can access that at any time they like. Any of the feds can access it at any time they like. It's completely not uncommon. I read an article a few weeks ago on the show where for no good reason, the FBI or whoever it is shows up at a bank. They literally go in. They take everybody's contents out of the out of the boxes. They put them in big Ziploc bags, and they make people come down and claim them. At that point, the bank knows what you have in your box. It's no longer private. And that's the whole point of safe deposit boxes. Ours are different. If you want to keep your stuff private and extremely secure, you know, that's we're the place to go. We've got a 20-some year history. We have liability insurances. Banks do not. We have dual locking systems, which can require two employees in order to unlock a safe, and on it goes. So we have a real nice facility. So anyhow, how'd I end up here? Wow. So I spent a lot of time. I was in banking, and I had, you know, I started out of college. Ironically enough, I had been removed from my home, unwanted at the time, not a real popular member of that family, and I had the privilege of bouncing around through group homes, and I had a blessing. God always looked out for me. I prayed in third grade to receive Christ. I forgot all about it until I prayed to receive him again when I was 18, and it all came back like a flood, where I remembered accepting him when I was younger. Well, the friends I had in high school all of a sudden were all going to college. I don't know why, maybe from moving schools. One of the mistakes I made, not even mistakes, just a natural knee-jerk reaction of a child. When you've been kicked out of your home by unwarranted by a parent, you want to restore the relationship. Being rejected by your parent is a very painful process. It's something you wouldn't want to go through. And so your natural, or at least my natural response, was to try to repair it, was to try to earn the affection back, because I took all the blame. I blamed myself. I took all the responsibility. I mean, I had Christmases I couldn't even communicate with my mother because she had no desire. And they, you know, I don't need sympathy, but this is just where I've come from. And so I tried and tried and tried and tried to earn my way back through good behavior, essentially, to get my family to re-adopt me or re-accept me, which required essentially, I think, almost like an adoption, because they had at one point signed me over to the state. And so I saw all my friends going to college, and I'm like, oh, shoot, I better go. So I called. I was in Montana. I called Montana State University, where friends were going. I asked what the requirement was to get in. The lady said, if you have a high school degree from Montana, you're automatically accepted. That was it. You know, I don't know if it's different now, but that's how it was back in the early, in the mid-80s. So I went to college, you know, first couple semesters or quarters. We were on a quarter system. First couple quarters, kind of bombed out. I was really into the party lifestyle and trying to find friends. Of course, trying to find a girlfriend. I'd had girlfriends, but I never had anybody who clicked. It wasn't meant to be at all. And I was very mature for my age. It's funny because I was probably one of the most immature people you've ever met for my age in one way. And in other ways, I was far more mature just because of what I'd been through. So I went to college, and I went through one major after the next. I was going to be a physical therapist, and I had a professor talk me out of it. And she said, 95% of you are going to be dealing with geriatrics, and I hope you like old people. I don't have anything against old people, but I wanted to be a sports physical therapist, and I, you know, I probably shouldn't have listened to her, but I did. And then I, you know, I tried business and everything, and I felt like I was cheating because everything came very easy to me. I have, apparently my IQ is tests show that I'm good. I'm high on that. And so I ended up studying mathematics, and I thought, well, I like math. I'm very good at it. And I thought, well, maybe I'll be a math teacher and a PE teacher because I love sports and I was good at math. I went all the way through that, you know, college to the last year almost, and started doing paraprofessionals and also substitute teaching all the time. And I learned quickly that students in general in high school, sadly but truthfully, don't really want to learn. They just did not have a desire to learn. And so my thing was, I don't want to try to teach kids that don't want to learn. I decided that's not what I wanted to do. So I started to study to be an actuary. I didn't allow myself enough time to get the tests, the actuarial exams actually done, which is very sad because it was a great profession. And but I was married with a child. I got married very young. I got married at 20. Why? I had become a believer. My wife and I, and this is very personal, and I probably shouldn't open my big mouth, but I do, and I feel like a lot of my listeners are family. My wife and I, when we were dating, and we'd both become brand new believers, we were struggling with our sexual purity. And so we decided to separate for that reason, even though we were the best of friends, and we really liked and loved each other. But we wanted to honor the Lord, and so we just tried to rid ourselves of the temptation. And during that, you know, process of breakup or whatever, my wife called me a short while later. My wife now, girlfriend then, called and said, "Hey, I'm pregnant." And I said, "Well, that's that. I knew what God thought. I knew what the Bible said." And I said, "Then we're getting married. And that's just what we're going to do." And we did. And so I was very young in school with a child. As soon as my wife gave birth to our son, her rheumatoid arthritis went crazy. Before that, she was on myocrysine. Believe it or not, folks, gold shots. They literally inject gold, they call them gold salts because that's the only way you can suspend gold, into the body, and it literally assists with all the joint damage and all the issues with autoimmune disorders like rheumatoid arthritis. It's a miracle. They state that back under the era of the pharaohs and whatnot, they used they take gold baths in what would cost today, from different calculations, billions and billions of dollars worth of gold. So she was on gold. As soon as she had her first child, she had a huge flare. Her rheumatoid went crazy. She ended up bedridden. So I was working full time, and she was bedridden and couldn't work. And so I was working full time, going to school full-time, trying to finish up my degree. I had to rush my degree for obvious reasons. I didn't have the time or the money. I worked my way through school. I left with very few. In fact, until I got married with her, I had never had any student loan debt or anything. And then once that began, you know, that lifestyle situation popped up, I began to use student loans and grants and things like that. And so I made my way through. I got out of college. I was an actuary. I did all the statistical analysis for insurance companies. I was insurance licensed in 4 states in every line possible. I worked for a company called Equifax. Everybody's familiar with them because they are the company that provides credit bureaus now. But back then, they also did back then, but they were a large company, and they subcontracted actuarial work for other companies that didn't want to do it in-house. So that's who I worked for. That's what I did. I was stuck in a basement in Kirkland, Washington, leaving at 7 at night because if I left at 5:30, the traffic was so bad I wouldn't get home till 7:30 at night. And I learned that if I left at 7, I'd still get home at 7:30 at night. So I decided to just stay late to avoid the traffic. And that's just what I chose to do. And over time, I did very well at that. I just didn't feel that it was going to be the long-term play that I wanted it to be. And so I took a pretty substantial pay cut, and I went to work for a bank called Norwest Banks in what they called the management training program, which was supposed to be about a three to five-year program where they basically teach you how to run a bank branch. And eventually you do. Well, I was apparently pretty good at it because in a year and a half, I had my first branch. I was the youngest promoted manager the company had ever seen, or they had over 1,000 branches. They put me in a branch in my hometown of Great Falls, Montana. They believed the branch was failing miserably. They knew it was done. They thought the city was too small. It wouldn't sustain it. And within the first fiscal year of business, I had that branch operating at record levels. I was receiving star performer awards and whatnot and doing pretty well. At the time, there was no limitation on interest rates and usury and points. The company, Norwest Financial, which was a division of Norwest Banks, when I managed the bank branch, I had all of the departments underneath me, from wealth and capital management to the real estate department, and everything was underneath me. And I had to, that's why I had to get Series 6 and 7 licensed. I was always into the money side of things a lot, and I was able to really turn that branch around. And I was able to get it up to where I was 2 years in a row, I received Star Performer Awards. But one thing I had a problem with, I was a believer, and they charged exorbitant points and fees, and the rates were really high in the Norwest Financial side. We literally had these notes, these little checks we'd send out in the mail that you could just sign the back and have a loan. And with all the insurances on it, I mean, the interest rate was 39%. And then they'd have all these insurances built into it. And this is no kidding. You would borrow $1,000, and over 3 years, your payback was $3,600. That's how high the interest rate was on these. People did not know how to borrow money. I remember going to my boss one time and saying, "Why in the world would anybody take this loan?" And he sat me down and he said, "Let me explain something." He said, "People don't know how to borrow money. People don't know how to manage their money well. They just, they borrow, borrow, borrow. And they don't understand interest and so on and so forth." And I remember just being shocked, just being like, "This is terrible. I can't believe it. I couldn't believe it." I mean, I was just like, "This is terrible." So my conscience bugged me. And then finally, you know, I got to the point where we kept growing so fast. I needed new employees. They wouldn't let me hire anyone new. They were brought in a guy from another branch who I knew, who I wasn't very fond of, who was stealing stamps at the time because we weren't using the electronic machinery. And I really discussed it with my boss in depth. It really bothered me. But he wanted me to get another Star Performer Award. And if there was any kind of personnel problem like that, it ruined the award. Well, I didn't realize back at the time, and I know it now, that clear back in the early 90s, we're talking like probably 93, that he would get like a $65,000 bonus when I would get a Star Performer Award. Well, you and I both know, hopefully, that, you know, $65,000 in 1993 is like 200 and some thousand now. So he chose to look past the sins of this individual. And he, well, my boss's boss came into town one time, and I brought it up, and we had a moral disagreement. And what I mean by that is they were not willing to take proper measures at that time. They wanted to wait until we all won this big award and then deal with it. And I just felt it was morally wrong. So I left the company. But I left the company actually at the exact same time I got offered a job out in Spokane with a company called Home Lending Associates. They were at the time the largest mortgage lender in the city, and they had a lot of. I checked all their filings; they'd done well. The problem is they wanted me to open a non-conforming mortgage department, and I did not mean for this to go on this long. I'm sorry. They wanted me to open a non-conforming mortgage department. When I started to order title work and appraisals, nobody would deal with us because the current owner was a deadbeat and didn't pay his bills, and they just didn't. These people were in arrears of like 25 appraisals and things like that, and they just would not no longer deal with him. And so I was in a pickle. I had all these loans. I'd built this pipeline, so I contacted another company and worked with a guy who we did what was called correspondent lending. I ran all the loans through them, and I had to split the commission with them. When I signed the commission agreement, I was young and dumb and didn't pay attention, and the owner of the mortgage company I worked for had me sign them in a certain way that basically gave him possession of all my commissions. It was Friday. He said, "It's a beautiful day. Why don't you guys all go home and enjoy the sunshine?" So we did. And on Saturday, I got a call from our head processor, Sue, and she said, "Hey, did you get that letter from that blankety blank?" And I said, "Letter? I haven't checked my mail." So I checked my mail. There was no letter. She said, "Well, he went bankrupt on us." So I immediately drove up to the building, and she was right. It had been pink tagged. The bankruptcy trustee had taken over all the assets, which wasn't a lot. It was a nice building, but other than that, I think he was just renting it. And so I thought, okay, well, that's great. This is back in the day when you could still talk to people. You didn't have to call a phone number and get a computer and never talk to a real person. So I got a hold of the bankruptcy trustee, and as we started to go through the records, he said, "There's no record you ever worked for the company." And I was like, "Hey, wait a minute. You know, I've been there for 4 months busting my tail trying to make this happen." And he said, "Well, I'm sorry. He never recorded you as an employee, so you don't exist." So all those loans that were booked and everything, that income went to him. And then the bankruptcy was filed. Of course, the trustee got the money, and you know, but portions of it were doled back to him, etc. So I was in a really bad spot. I've been living on credit. I was literally broker than you can imagine. Tons of time on my knees. One of the times, really weird. When you look back at some of the hardest times of your life, they're the best. At this time of my life, I was seeking Jesus like never before. I was on my knees praying and begging, "Take care of me, Lord." And I remembered an offer I'd gotten a couple years back when I'd worked a car deal for my father with Lexus of Spokane, which was Appleway Motors at the time. The sales manager, general sales manager, Vaughn Jones, said, "Hey, if you know," he enjoyed the transaction we conducted. He said, "You're very good. If you ever want a job as a finance manager, give me a call." Suddenly, I'm in a situation where I need the job, even though I told him I'd never be in Spokane and I'd never be in the car business. So I called him, and I basically said, "Hey, I need a job." He said, "I can't give it to you right now. We don't have any openings, but you can sell cars for me." I said, "There's no way I'm going to sell cars. I want an F&I job." He said, "I can't hire you." I said, "Who can?" He said, "The owners can." So I met with the owners and sold my tail off. Believe me, begged them, promised them. I knew very little about the car business, but I knew that I could do anything well. So I convinced them that if they hired me, that I would make them plenty of money, and it would far more than pay for myself. The owner of Appleway Motors, believe it or not, Jack Pring, was really into signatures. And when I filled out the application, one of his primary reasons he hired me was he loved my signature. Crazy, right? But it's a true story. So I went to work there about a year and a half, 2 years. praying the whole time to get out and get back into banking. Really difficult finding a good banking job. I didn't want to just be a branch manager. That's pretty boring. And so I finally got this wonderful job with B of A, Bank of America Housing Services. I started out as account exec, worked my way up to regional manager, so that I oversaw a three-state region. And that's and then at that, about that time, I really was just falling in love with coins. I was praying to the Lord all the time. I really wanted an opportunity to be self-employed. I just wanted to be self-employed. I had this fantasy in my mind that if you're self-employed, you never have to work ever again, and you know you can do whatever you want. Sadly, folks, for all of those of you with the delusional fantasy, that's not the case. When you're self-employed, you work twice as hard as anybody else because the buck stops with you on everything. And so I ended up with this banking job. You know, I did very well at it. But as I was traveling with the bank, I began to really get the word out that I bought and sold coins and collections and estates and gold. And I started to, I made business cards and started to advertise. And I would work for the bank during the day. And at night, I would buy estates and collections. And it went very well. It really took off. And but I was I would stay up at late at night going through coins. I spent my weekends traveling to national shows. And that grew and grew to a point where until the Lord finally said, it's time. I want you to get out of corporate America, which that's where my heart was anyway. I'd had my fill of corporate America. And I ended up opening my own coin business, which at first I was in. I had the western half of Pounder's Jewelry. I was there for many years. As I far outgrew that, God just had me wait patiently. Eventually, the property next door came up. I bought the property. Over time, I built the building that we're currently in. It's been very, very blessed. It's been a good thing. It's interesting how long we've been here now. We've been in the building alone about 12 years. I've been in business about 20, since 96. So whatever that is, 22 years. God's been very good to us. We've grown. When I got into the business, I really didn't. It wasn't about money. It was because I loved coins. But I did bring a high-volume, low-margin philosophy to Spokane that they had never seen before. Spokane dealers did not take care of their customers at all. I believed in the opposite, low-margin, high-volume. And I made my motto honesty, integrity, and professionalism in every transaction. And because of that, we grew and grew and grew. And over time, God just, he really blessed me. I mean, he blessed me beyond anything you can imagine. And this is the grace of God. It's just so, so amazing. And I'm a broken human. I'm a fallen man. I'm just like you. But for the grace of God, there go I. It says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And every one of us is a sinner, whether we want to admit it or not. And Jesus died on the cross for us. And thank you, Jesus, that he reached out to me and was able to find me. And I was able to respond because I can't imagine life without Jesus in it. And so our business has grown. We've been Christian owned and operated ever since. I've had, you know, all kinds of different experiences with people working for me. The most disappointing was when my manager, Isaac, was stealing, even though I was paying him dearly. He had kind of like Asperger's. He was super brilliant with coins, not perfect with people, and he became jealous. I think his wife did as they began to see my success. And that was really sad. That was a downturn. And then after that, other challenges have come our way. But we sit here today desiring your business, wanting your business. In fact, I mention regularly, and I see that people continue to do it, and I thank you so much. Please, please, go on to Google and give us a 5-star rating. You know, I'm assuming if you've done business with us or whatever, put it in there. A 5-star rating, And then let us know. Call us, and we will give you a free silver Morgan dollar. Okay? I'll give you a free Morgan dollar. If you want either that or a one-ounce silver coin. If you want two coins, do it three times. In other words, do it on Google, do it on like Yahoo and wherever else, Yelp or whatever else is out there. Bing, I don't even know. Just find three locations. Google's one of them. The rest of them, just do it for us. We really appreciate it. It's so important to us. The customer's so important. We care. We're not just asking for this for nothing. We will earn your business. We are high volume, low margin. I believe right now is a great buying time. I don't believe there's anywhere else to put your money. I really sincerely don't. Everything else scares me, okay? Even commercial real estate that has income. Why? Because the internet is drawing more people away from the physical storefront. So it's a little bit of a spooky time. So keep your money solid and sound. The prices are great on precious metals. Give us a call. Let us put your money into precious metals, gold, silver, whatever it may be. I was going to say platinum or palladium, but whatever. Let us build your portfolio. It'll be primarily precious metals. We'll throw in some numismatic coins that have exceptional historical performance. You don't need to be an expert. All you need to be able to do is read, and you can look them up whenever you want. So that's kind of how we got here. That's kind of the long story short version of it because of limited amounts of time. But I will tell you, God is great. God's been so good to us, and it's so awesome to have so many believer customers. And my biggest regret is I don't get to the counter enough because I'm so busy administratively. But I just wanted to say thank you, and folks, pray for us. I mean, I got a lot going on. We all do. We're humans. It means so much. That's the most powerful thing you can do for us. Thanks again for tuning in. Again, take care. God bless, and we'll be back Wednesday. Bye-bye.